This guy told the committee that there are two separate issues. One is who has the authority to resolve, that is, to take over and settle the claims when there's a failed institution. For most companies in the U.S., that's a bankruptcy court. For banks, that's the FDIC. And these big non-bank financial firms like, say, Citigroup are kind of a mix, and so they're in a gray area. One question is who gets to do that? Who should be responsible for that? The second question is how do they do that? And my main point is that the new legislation basically authorizes the FDIC to be the resolver, but in addition, it gives the FDIC the ability to draw on taxpayer funds to purchase the assets, to make loans, et cetera, to these failing institutions, in effect to prop them up, to bail them out, exactly as we did with TARP, and that part I'm strongly opposed to.
Yeah, because the FDIC's authority stems from a statute that goes back many decades offering depositor insurance, but there's no statute that says you have insurance if you make a bad investment.
There isn't, and there shouldn't be. And in fact, what this would do is to make there be such a statute. It would basically provide insurance for all of the assets of these non-bank financial firms, and that would encourage them to take more risks. Okay, and they've implicitly had that in the past, and we saw that through the TARP. But this makes it explicit, and I think will encourage a huge amount of excessive risk taking, which we don't want.
And, you know, TARP really did bail out to a large degree, non-bank financial firms. I mean, that's kind of what happened with TARP.
Oh, it's what it did. That's what it was designed to do by the people who advocated it. And their claim was that if we hadn't done that, there would have been economic meltdown. I think those claims were strongly exaggerated. I think, in fact, the announcement of the bailout itself was one of the factors which led to the panic, not the failures themselves. But that is the issue that different people will have to debate. But we shouldn't confuse the fact that giving the FDIC this authority to resolve these institutions, which in and of itself is not necessarily bad, is separate from the question of should we give the FDIC the ability to draw on taxpayer funds when it tries to resolve these institutions. That part is, in my judgment, extremely problematic.
And there's also the issue of just sheer competence, because the FDIC is very good at bank resolution. They have well-developed processes and a long history of expertise there. But they don't, I mean, and what people are saying, part of the problem in this latest crisis is that some agencies, like the SEC, just didn't realize what they were looking at that was right before their eyes. And so the question is, would the FDIC as an institution really be able to do this from a practical standpoint?
Well, I think that the FDIC has, in fact, done a quite reasonable job of resolving a huge number of banks, you know, over its history. But typically, those are smaller banks or medium-sized banks. Typically, they're happening in a relatively isolated circumstance, so there's not the issues of systemic risk or panic or anything like that. It's not so much the FDIC competence. There's a question of what should the rules be for these huge institutions that are very complicated, that are a mixture of bank and non-bank activities, and that unlike, say, an airline, where when it goes bankrupt, all its assets would seem to still be there. The planes are still there, the gates are still there, and so on. For these financial institutions, if the value of their assets plummet because of some change in the market, then there doesn't seem to be much left to resurrect, and so you may simply have to just dissolve them. So people argue we need some different bankruptcy rules to apply to these institutions. That's perfectly reasonable, but the part of those new rules that I would oppose is giving them taxpayer funds.
We're talking to Jeff Miron. He's a senior fellow at the Cato Institute and director of the Undergraduate Studies Program at the Department of Economics at Harvard University. So, Mr. Miron, if I read you correctly, you think that private institutions or financial institutions, I'll put it that way, that get themselves into trouble should be allowed to fail.
They should be allowed to fail. And sometimes that means they would simply be bought by a healthier institution, and so much of what they were doing would continue without too much interruption, just under a different name. In some cases, it means they would be literally dissolved, their assets sold off, and the proceeds provided to the extent possible to the remaining creditors. And that's just the way things go. It's not good for the people who lose their value, the creditors who lose money, but it's good for society going forward, because then people have the incentive to take appropriate, not excessive, amounts of risk.
And so the idea that the Federal Reserve take over the oversight of financial institutions that are quote unquote too big to fail is also something you would oppose?
I would oppose it, again, not because I think the Fed isn't competent to do it. It's because I think if the Fed does it, it will inevitably adopt the attitude of not letting these institutions fail, you know, hardly ever. It will certainly let a few small ones fail from time to time, but it won't it will err in the direction of the short run of worrying about the consequences of failure, rather than saying we have to set up the right incentives going forward to avoid having to do this in the future. And so we will just have more and more crises of the form that we have just seen.
And do you think the reluctance of the Treasury Department to let go of TARP, even though there doesn't seem to be any need for it at the moment and there's still money left that could be returned to the taxpayers, is that maybe evidence that once you have this kind of facility existing in the federal government, then the default will always be to bail out everything?
Absolutely. If there's an ongoing fund, there was just an article in this morning's papers that the Treasury wants to hold on to the unexpended TARP funds rather than returning them so that it has a capacity to bail out in future. That, again, is institutionalizing TARP and making it even more explicit to these financial institutions, if you mess up, hey, we're going to bail you out. And that, of course, means they will take on more and more risk going forward.
And, you know, this, I don't know how we got here in this country. Obviously, Treasury Secretary Paulson at the time under the Bush administration felt, I think, closely aligned to, you know, those that he had worked with on Wall Street. And perhaps he knew the severity of the situation, didn't want to end the Bush administration on that note of many financial institutions sort of like going down the chutes. So you disagree with that whole assumption that very grave faced Secretary Paulson showing up to, Congress saying basically, if we don't do this, we can forget about the Western world.
Yeah, I think that was an extreme exaggeration. Now, I don't deny that things would have been unpleasant, but at the time, they made it sound as though we wouldn't have any big problems if we went along with what they were doing, that everything would sort of be okay. And, of course, that turned out to be wrong. We had huge problems, an enormous drop in the stock market and so on, despite having gone along with the TARP. But my second view is, even if we would have had a somewhat bigger recession, I think it actually would have been worth it to avoid having worse things in the future. I think we have to bear a certain amount of pain and learn our lessons, or we're never going to stop having these kinds of financial crises.
Yeah, because if there are assets of any value left in a failed institution, a Lehman Brothers or whatever the case might be, then there's probably a market for them. There's always bottom feeders that do well in a lot of other markets, say auto parts, for example, or appliances.
That's certainly the case. There would have been markets for much of that. Of course, many institutions would have had to sell at fire sale prices, and that's bad for them. Of course, that's why they don't want to do it, and that's why the too big to fail doctrine is so self-serving for the financial industry. It allows them to say, oh, we're not just asking for a bailout for us. We're just trying to save the whole system. Okay, but in fact, most of the negative is on the people who made the bad bets. It's far from clear from the evidence that there's significant spillover to the rest of the economy, and so we need to make sure that we give the decision makers the right incentives so that they don't take these excessive risks in the future.
All right. So, Mr. Myron, did you make any progress with the Financial Services Committee on this?
Well, I was sort of surprised at how strong the hostility is to bailouts. And I think there were many members who would like to be convinced that the risks of some new Great Depression were really not so severe, who would like to be convinced that we can proceed in a different way. But it is a question that's not trivial to address from the evidence. It is an empirical question, and so there's going to be an ongoing discussion about it. I mean, in one level, it's too bad we didn't try it, because that way at least we would have some more evidence on whether we would have had such a huge meltdown.
Yeah, when rolling the dice at that point was not something they were willing to do.
Yeah, because there's always politics.
It's not something they're willing to do, but that's kind of part of the problem, is every single instance when this comes up, no one wants to roll the dice, and so we bail people out, and then we have the problem the next time. It's like having a teenager, you know, who overspends the allowance and is in some sort of difficulty, and you want to say, okay, I'm going to bail you out now, but I promise I'm never going to do it again. This is the very last time.
And then
but
you
know
again.
As soon as you do it, you create the incentive for it to happen again.